Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
At this point in our program, we go around the room and introduce ourselves, first name and or last name. We start over here.
My name is David.
My name is Michael.
I'm Andreas.
My name is Kat.
Peter.
I'm Tom Brown.
I'm Mark.
Yeah.
I'm Sean Clark.
I'm Ray Dyer.
My name is Todd Toron.
Joseph Fisher.
Chris.
My name is Roy.
I'm Jack.
George.
Jose.
Scott.
Peter.
Daniel. Roger.
Manuel.
My name is Gary.
My name is Jim.
Michael.
My name is Michael.
Tony.
William.
Jeffrey.
Jim.
Jim Shelton.
And I'm David Lewis.
I think the background didn't
have.
Oh,
sorry.
Age.
I'm Nathan.
I'm
Sean McGee.
My name is Brian.
Mike McGee.
Kerwin.
Lies.
Thank you. Today we're talking about the Prison Pen Pal program, which there's actually more than one of. And we have a panel of four of us up front. Jim Stewart and I, you know, from Sangha, and we're simply pen pals. We're participants of the program. And Jim Shalcom and Jeffrey Schneider are both associated with the Zen Center. Jim is closest to me, and Jeffrey is over on the far end. And we're all going to just spend a few minutes taking turns, the four of us, talking about our experience with the program and a little bit about how much it operates or how it operates and what the difference between the basic Zen Center program and the gay pen pal program that we participate in through our Sangha. And then we're going to open up to questions and discussion and hope to get everybody involved in asking questions and sharing comments about the program. So it's kind of a loose format, but that's what we have in mind. And we're going to start out with Jim Shalcom, who's, I believe, is one of the founders of both programs?
No, actually just the gay portion.
Okay.
But thank you, David. Hi, everybody. My name is Jim Shalcom, and I hope it's okay if I read most of this. I'll get through it faster. And actually, I'm delighted to talk about the Prison Pen Pal program because it's something that gives me great joy and also greatly benefits my practice. Today, my portion of the panel discussion is to talk about the creation and the evolution of the gay portion of the Pen Pal program that's housed at San Francisco Zen Center, and also just briefly stating its purpose, which is to provide support for LGBT inmates in beginning or deepening their Buddhist practice while incarcerated. And actually, the Gay Buddhist Fellowship and the San Francisco Zen Center's involvement with prison correspondence goes back a long time. I'm not exactly sure how long, but Don Weber actually started writing inmates, I think, who contacted GBF, and then he brought the program to the Zen Center. And I'm not sure how long ago that was, but quite a while. I learned about the program and started writing my pen pal, whose name is Michael, about 4.5 years ago. And I suggested it. I'm also a member of the Gay Buddhist Sangha, so I suggested that program to the Gay Buddhist Sangha. In 2008, Lee Lipp, who was then the Zen Center outreach coordinator, suggested perhaps that a collaboration among all of our groups might create something very unique, and that is an exclusive LGBT prison correspondence program, which I believe is the first in the world. I don't know of any others exclusively gay. Accordingly, Lee, representing the Zen Center, Baruch Golden from your organization and myself from GBS, met and formed the first Pen Pal network. Quickly, many loving and kind folks jumped in helping making this a reality, and David Lewis and Don Mohideen and Tom Broome, and there's probably many others that I'm not mentioning, so forgive me if I haven't mentioned your name. But we established the framework for the network. We created and enhanced the Yahoo group site, and we began matching LGBT incarcerated brothers and sisters with LGBT volunteer pen pals in the free world. And that's what we're called from the prisoners, from our prisoners' perspective, is we're called free worlders, which I think is a term that captures the essence of the blessings that we have in our life to be free. Lee ultimately left the role, and the Reverend Jeffrey Schneider from the Zen Center became outreach coordinator, and he's helped us streamline the process and expand the network even further. Initially, I think there were about five or six of us who were writing gay pen pals through the original program at the Zen Center. Today, there's more than 50, at least 50 or more volunteers who are writing more than 100 LGBT prisoners in practically every state. And our volunteers equally come from all over the United States. We do our best to match the inmates with volunteers with the same problems or issues. So, for instance, we try to match, we have successfully matched people with HIV, people in 12-step programs. We recently matched, within the last year, our first woman in prison, a lesbian woman in prison with a lesbian pen pal. We've recently matched handicapped inmates with a handicapped pen pal. And also, we had one request for a person who wanted to explore both Buddhism and Christianity, and we were able to find a match for that person as well. What's really amazing is to see how the program has evolved by word of mouth, because now prisoners are contacting us without seeing the advertisements or seeing us from anywhere else. They're hearing about us through word of mouth by other prisoners. And similarly, the volunteers are coming, doing online searching and finding our organization. And so our volunteers are from all across America. We have had a couple requests from outside of the United States, but we've chosen at this time not to deal internationally yet. It's a little complex to do that. Interesting, too, another sideline I think which is interesting is that a lot of our volunteers have been in prison themselves. So I think that brings a special understanding that they're able to give to their pen pals. I wonder if I might just ask for a show of hands of folks who have written prisoners or who are currently writing prisoners here. This is great. This is cool. Okay. So thank you all. Anyway, my thanks to all of you for your kindness and generosity. And my thanks in advance to all of you who might at this very moment be considering maybe this is something that I can do too. So Annette, I'm going to conclude then and turn it over to the outreach coordinator, Reverend Jeffrey Schneider from the San Francisco Zen Center.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Hi. So, my name's Jeffrey Schneider, and about 3.5 years ago, I took over the outreach and volunteer coordination at the San Francisco Zen Center, which meant that I was taking over the prison correspondence program at Zen Center, as well as helping Jim and Baruch coordinate the gay Buddhist prison Gay Men's Buddhist Prison Network stuff. So anyhow, I want to... So, but before that, I've been writing to prisoners myself for quite a few years, independently. In May, I went to a training by the sponsored by the Department of Public Health for people in the helping professions who might be dealing with clients who were formerly incarcerated. And during that training, I was exposed to some information that I sort of wanted to share with you about the nature of the prison system, both in the country in general and in California specifically. I'm just going to give you a few little items here to mull over, some of which I knew and some of which I didn't realize how indeed horrendous it actually was. Currently, at least as of May, I suppose, there were 2.3 million people in prison or jail in this country, which makes the United States of America the country which has the highest per capita inmate population in the world. We incarcerate more of our citizens than any other country in the world, followed closely by China and Russia. So that would be like 750 people per every 100,000 citizens in the United States. From between 1974 and 2001, the prison population in the United States has tripled. We are currently operating in the state of California at 200% capacity in our prisons and jails. Some of the reasons for this are criminalization of mental illness and substance abuse, the mandatory sentencing structure for nonviolent offenses, loss of industry, no rehab to speak of in our prisons and jails. Parole regulations, and, of course, the ever-popular poverty and racism inherent. The other thing that that we should probably know, and maybe you already have some sense of this, is that the prison industry is big business. In 2007, it was a $44 billion business in this country. And if we went back to the prison population as it was in the 1970s, it would cost the state of California alone 1 million jobs. So as you see, there's a lot of good reasons to keep people in prison and to make sure that they either stay there or that they return. There's a 70% recidivism rate among people in prison. Interestingly enough, one of the other things that prison does for us is that it serves as a large mental hospital. In 1970, in the state of California, there were 500,000 psych beds in, mental hospitals versus 100,000 psych beds in prison. In 1991, that had gone down to only 100,000 psych beds available in the, public health world, as opposed to 1,200,000 psych beds in prisons. We are using the prisons as a basic way of, the word that came to mind was treating our chronic people with chronic not treating, but warehousing. People with chronic mental illness. As I said, recidivism is at 70%. Because there's no rehab, when people get out of prison, there's almost nothing to encourage them to stay out of prison. Housing, employment. There is, in case you didn't know, in many places there is a ban on financial aid for education to former convicts convicted of substance abuse. So anyhow, it really sucks. You know, as individuals, there's you know, not so much we can do about it unless we choose to become politically active. However, as individuals, we can reach out on a one-to-one basis. You know, as Jim said, we are fortunate. You know, as I said, I've been writing to prisoners for a long time, and sometimes I have a number of people that I write, as well as being the coordinator of the program and trying to find prison pen pals. I write to a number of them, and you know, I have to say, it runs the range. You know, some people just write to us because they're hoping that somebody will write back to them, and their interest in their practice of Buddhism is pretty minimal. Some of them are incredibly. There are some men in there who. Well, who put my own practice to shame, who have turned their prison life into monastic practice. There are a good friend of mine and a truly inspiring man was a man, a priest at the Zen Center, a gay Buddhist priest named John King. John died a few years ago, but he was very committed to prison Sangha, prison Dharma, and he was one of the mainstays of the prison Sangha at San Quentin. He would go out every week. When he died, he left Zen Center a bequest of $20,000 to be used entirely for Buddhist books for prisoners. So we still have that bequest, and twice a year, we help replenish that fund by doing book sales at Zen Center. So they've been pretty successful. We've been able to keep the capital sort of still at $20,000. But one of the things that it allows us to do is that it allows us to send Buddhist books, like new, good Buddhist books, to prisoners, you know, all over the United States for no cost, either to the prisoner or to the pen pal. And, you know, it's one of the wonderful parts of my job is to be able to send Dharma into the prisons for people who are, you know, most prisoners are, you know, don't have a lot of resources. They can't buy books. And a lot of them, you know, a lot of people are imprisoned in states where there's not a lot of Buddhism going on. And actually in prisons where the chaplains might be actively hostile to anything but their particular brand of Christianity. You know, my own experience of writing to prisoners you know, I've come to admire some of these guys so much. And, you know, it's not to say that everybody, you know, that everybody you write is going to be like a sterling example of, you know, Buddhist practice in prison. You know, some of them are scammers, you know. Some, you know, I've had people that I've had to draw very clear boundaries with. But, you know, I ask myself, you know, what would it be like to be in prison where I need everything and I can't get it through my own, you know, through my own efforts. I can only rely on the kindness of strangers. So, you know, the need is there. There are, as you know, as Jim said, there are basically have two programs that sort of interact a lot. There's the, you know, Gay Men's Buddhist Prison Network, where prisoners who are gay, you know, write to us. And then there's the one that we do at Zen Center, which is, you know, for anybody. Some of the prisoners will be gay, most of them are straight. We've got, oddly enough, just a handful of women who write to us. And we have people writing us from all over the country, and we do have people who have offered to write. So to be a pen pal to a prisoner takes about half an hour a month and 44 cents. So, If you're interested, you can talk to any of us. I'm going to have to leave very shortly after we, end the formal portion. But I did bring some of my business cards with my email address and my office number. And if anybody's interested, you can have one, and I'll leave some with Jim as well. I think that's all I had prepared to say, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeffrey. Some of those stats, I kind of knew the general picture, but I didn't know quite how bad it was. It's clear that our nation does not treat prisoners compassionately. That's not an element in our the way we administer our prisons. But that's something that we can do as individuals, is we can offer that compassion, and that's an important Buddhist practice. And I think for me, that's one of the, just speaking for about what I get out of the program as a correspondent, is sharing that compassion is really an important part of my practice, an important part of my life. As Jeffrey said, it's not easy being a prisoner. It's even more not easy for a lot of people being a Buddhist prisoner, and it's not easy being a gay prisoner. Brooke Golden, who many of you know and was not able to be here this morning because he had to work today, is kind of the administrator for our part, the GBF part of the program. And he put it out to his a couple of the prisoners that he writes to and said, you know, we're going to be having this discussion at our Sangha. Do you have any feedback for members of the Sangha? So he actually got a response from one of his prisoners, and I'd just like to read a paragraph from his letter with his permission. I was fortunate to have a regular Buddhist group at Mule Creek, that's a prison, and to have Jasper, that's a correspondent, as a pen pal, who sent me Buddhist pictures, books, and articles. I share the pictures Jasper sent, and we use them on our altar in the chapel. I also shared the books and articles with others. What a blessing to have outside support. There are many inmates who get no mail at all and have no Buddhist group to attend. This prison has no Buddhist group and is frustrating at times. Oftentimes, being gay in the prison further isolates you. So if anyone is considering writing an inmate, please do. The support places seeds of goodness that will grow within the garden of love and compassion. So there's a real need, and word is getting spread within the prisons, and I believe we have more prisoners than we have correspondents. We can always use new people. I would just like to say one thing that people, when we've talked about this before, that people have said to me is, well, gee, I'm not an authority on Buddhism, or you know, I don't feel like I've got the capacity to be giving someone advice. I would say that should not be an issue for you. I happen to have been talking to another volunteer correspondent who said that his prison pen pal is his teacher, that, you know, it works the other way around, too. So I wouldn't waste too much energy if you're thinking about volunteering for this program, worrying about, you know, whether you have the capacity or the knowledge or the background. You're sharing your own experience and your practice is, I think, what's probably most wanted from our prison pen pals. I have had at times as many as 5 pen pals, and they're all different. They're all different in their experience. I've had pen pals that kind of wanted to address the gay issues in their lives more, and other pen pals that really wanted to talk about Dharma. Some that wanted advice and feedback, and if something that I didn't know about or couldn't address, you know, I did my best to find out, and I would send them a book if I wasn't able to talk about. For instance, I had a pen pal that wanted to talk about, that wanted to balance their Jewish heritage and practice with their Buddhist practice. Not being Jewish, I happen to know that Sylvia Borstein wrote a book about that very thing, and he got Sylvia's book. So there's resources out there. We actually have a Yahoo website for the gay program where we can share ideas and resources. So if you're if you get a question from a prisoner that you don't know how to address, or if you want to know what someone's experience is, or just ask for advice, you can put it out there on the Yahoo site and the Yahoo group and get some feedback. So, as Jeffrey said, it's not a big commitment. It's maybe a half an hour a month. And I can tell you from personal experience that it's a half hour well spent. It just adds great meaning to my life, and it reminds me of all the men and women that are incarcerated in this country that have no support, no one to talk to, and very often no spiritual resources. They really need us, and we make a very big difference in their lives. So, Jim, would you like to talk about your experience?
Yeah, I started before this network because Don Wick would get letters, and he would put out a call for people to read letters, and I resisted for 7 years. I had been a draft resister during the Vietnam War and been sentenced to prison, and I won the appeal ultimately, but mentally I had spent a lot of time in prison, and I just did not want to go there. But one day, for no reason that I can recall, I just sat down, and because I was a forger in a past life, I have a lot of interest in handwriting, and I I saw a letter that had well-shaped, well-balanced, same script on the envelope, so I grabbed it. And I think my fear was that I was going to get sucked up into a dependent situation, and I just could not control it. It sort of happened. but this is, I just want, and he, my guy James called this week, and I said, I'm going to be talking about you, and he said, I am at peace with my past. Use whatever quote that you want, So, but this was the first, this is what I pulled up. Hello, I don't even know who I'm writing to, but I'm at a point in my life where my quality of life is such that I wonder why I even attempt to continue. My life has been drama and chaos from the moment I was born. I saw somewhere that you guys did some work with Larkin Street Youth Center. We do meals. My mom was a drug addict, and I grew up from age 12 on Polk Street, doing dope, prostitute, make money doing porn, etc. Larkin Street was a safe place I could go to when it all just got overwhelming. I've never had any family except the one we, as kids, made for ourselves on the street. My mom OD'd when I was 11, and instead of going to a foster home, I ran away. Anyway, I've been in and out of prison since 93, and in here I'm on the very bottom of the food chain because I'm gay. I've been down this time since 2001, and last year, knowing I already have two strikes, I escaped. I just could not take it anymore. I was gone all last summer. It may sound strange, but the whole time I was out was kind of spiritual because I knew when I finally got arrested again, I would be in prison for life. So I spent my days doing things I have never done. I lived in the moment. I ended up getting arrested in West Hollywood selling dope. I was fortunate that I only got 4 more years. I get out in 2012. I know that reaching out like this seems desperate, but I need some guidance and support. I'm tired of being lonely. I want to find my way out of this muck I've been in for 36 years. Question, I've done many things like cheating, stealing drugs all through my life, and my karma must be pretty bad. My next life isn't going to be a life as a fly or a snake as punishment, is it? And then he writes inside, I hope not. No. Please pass this along to someone you feel can relate to me. I'm in a bad place in my life. Well, this is irresistible. Besides being, very dramatic and poignant, it's very well written. And I care about good prose, so I wrote him back and said, you should be writing every day. These are perfectly shaped sentences. And so I just got into a thing of supporting him as much as I could. And we, of course, went on out for 4 years. And I'm appalled at his gratitude. I get thanks occasionally. But this is a gratitude of a particularly piercing and authentic order. Because I feel like I think I've accidentally been a buttress for him at some very dark hours. Although I know the guidelines that came after say, you know, don't use your real name, don't use your address, don't give your phone number, don't ever send money. All too late. I've done that all, you know. I told him, at one point, I don't know, maybe it was Christmas, but, you know, in my life I've learned that it's important to ask for things, to be clear about what you want. So I just spontaneously said, you know, life likes to be asked. So practice asking with me, and I'll do what I can. And he was very timid, and he sent and this little order form, and it was like toothpaste and a razor and soap. And I said, you know, get some cookies, get some, you know, get some treats. So anyway, so we have an understanding that, you know, $100 a quarter. He can get a package once a quarter. So that's, so I'm sort of his go-to guy for material things. And then, and you know, we arranged for him to be able to buy a guitar because he loves the guitar. And I try to get him what he asked for, which is he's very reluctant to ask and is embarrassed at asking. I find him, I mean, once he described as a 12-year-old, he was in a foster home in Santa Cruz, and he says, I was fucking my foster dad, so I didn't have to worry about going to school. So I hung out with the surfers. We smoked pot, had sex. It was grand. You know, it was grand. This guy really has a taste for freedom. And that's what I really want to support. I don't think I've been a great Buddhist mentor, especially. Although I, you know, I initially tried to teach him how to meditate, and I told him about the metta prayer, which he does use because there's so many difficult people in prison. Mm-hmm. And once he asked for a nice copy of the Eightfold Path, so I found one and sent it to him. He's been moved around, you know. But he finally got moved to a prison at Ione, which is a pretty good prison, and near Sacramento. So we set up, so I went out to meet him. This was a couple years ago. And we had a very pleasant, a little awkward. I mean, here we are sort of, he wants to know of other life other than this prison thing. Tell me about your life. Tell me what's going on. Tell, you know. And he's embarrassed that he doesn't have more interesting stuff to relay. But anyway, I went, and he's a survivor. He has unbelievable life force, and he's got a lot of courage, and he has resilience. He has come up from many things, and he has a sense for freedom. And he, because of his substance problems, he got training in prison to be a leader of workshops through the Walden House training. And so he's had positions of leadership throughout his time in prison when he doesn't escape and lose all his privileges. And so then I asked him, I said, tell me about this escape. And he said, well, you know, I had the best job in prison. I had a computer. I had an office. I was a dispatcher. Then I started making phone calls. Then I started going online. Then I just couldn't take it anymore. And I said, so how did you, you know, I was thinking movies. I said, I got a guard's uniform, and I just walked out, and I knew where the vans were. I knew where the keys were. I knew where the credit card was. And he just drove out. And something in me just applauds. I can't help it. I have tried to escape many times myself. So anyway, we have, you know, I'm not a good Buddhist, but I tell you, I have felt generosity and compassion and kindness and even wisdom occasionally come through me to him. In the setup of this relationship. So, you know, the old saying that you can't really teach something. You never really learn something until you try and teach it. And I have found myself discovering knowledge I didn't realize I had about Buddhism and life. He's getting out. He just called this week, and he... he's been interviewed, and he's going to be part of the first batch of guys who are released, hopefully at the end of October. And the state is so fucked. It is just, we are all in great shame to be part of the taxpayers that support this horrific prison system. I mean, at one point he was at the top of a triple bunk in a gymnasium filled with guys. We indulge in metaphors of prison, the prisons of the mind and stuff, but real life prison is really, it's got to be terrible. And yet there's civility. They cook dinner for each other, with their little supplies. They have kindness. And he now has a little vole, a little rodent who's his pet and who he loves. And anyway, he's getting out. And he thinks he has at least 3 months at Walden House. He very much wants to come here. He wants to volunteer at the Larkin Street at our meals. He wants to live a life of service, working with street kids and working in drug rehab programs. And, I'm a goner. I'm going to help him as much as I can, and that's just it's just how it's evolved. I just, I've reread our correspondence this past week, and I care about him. He's a really good guy, and I would love for him to be nurtured by this community. That's where I am. And you don't have to do what I did, but it's an adventure when you sign up, and it's an incredible service. It really makes a difference. Once in his last letters he said, "You have no clue what a difference you've made in my life." Well, I don't, but it's we can't imagine what it means to have someone on the outside. Anyway, so that's my experience. And I don't do the program in terms of some of the guidelines, which he thinks are very important. I said, I'm sort of off the reservation with you. And he said, well, these guidelines are very important to be discreet in how you expose yourself initially until you know who you're dealing with. But I always thought I did, so I just... anyway, I was myself with him, and he has been with me. And it's the richest correspondence. And I tell you, to get a handwritten letter, how often do you get this anymore? It doesn't happen. It's a lost art. And it's a lost form of communication. And it's richer than email.
Thank you, Jim.
So, open it up to you. Do you have questions for any of us?
Could I just add a couple of things? I just wanted to mention, and I forgot to mention at the beginning, that the way that it works, both for the Zen Center and for the Gay Men's Buddhist Prison Sangha, is if you wish to remain anonymous, you can choose a pseudonym. That goes on file with Jim and me. And all the mail that is sent to you comes to the Zen Center, and then I forward it to you. So you are protected, if you want to be, which we suggest actually, from having your address be available to the person that you write. And if you prefer to use a pseudonym, that's also something that you can do. Some of us do, some of us don't. And the other thing I just wanted to mention is that, I'm always available through email or telephone calls if you have any questions about what books to send, or if they have some questions about Buddhist teaching or practice that you don't feel like you can answer. If I don't know it, I always know where to find the answer pretty much. And then, thank you.
So, did you bring a copy of the guidelines for that?
Yes.
Okay, so I just wanted to mention that on the Yahoo group that we created, there's all sorts of, there's the guidelines, which I think is really important. Your experience is rather unique, Jim.
There were no guidelines when I started.
Right, yeah. No. I just want people to that, like you said, you're afraid you're going to get sucked into something. Mm-hmm. But it's structured in such a way that really is what drew me to it. Once I read the guidelines, I said, okay, there's a structure, there's an arm's length relationship, I can have a pseudonym, all this stuff. And had it not been for that, I might not have participated. Mm-hmm. So those guidelines are available to read. I would encourage you to do so. And also on the Yahoo group, we have links to articles you can print out, you know, there's reprints. You can just print at home, stuff in your envelope, and send something every time you write, you know, as a resource. So that's there. It's GM, Gay Men's Buddhist Prison Network, GMBPN, at yahoo.com. It's linked from the GBF website. It's also linked from the GBF Yahoo group, Gay Buddhist. So that's all there.
GBM?
Oh, Gay Men's Buddhist Prison Network. So GMBPN. I don't know how we came up with that.
I wish we could change it. I don't know if Yahoo allows us to do it.
Or you could just go to our website. Our
this group is linked there. Everything's linked. It's kind of all cross links.
Yes.
Tell me how do other than word of mouth, how do prisoners find out about this? Is you someone mentions that like advertising or it's they see it. Where did they find this? Where did they find it out?
Well, I think Jim mentioned that a lot of it's happening word of mouth now. Right. But originally we had an ad someplace.
Yeah, I think you guys used to have an ad. Was it in Tricycle or one of the?
I don't recall.
So just within the literature, public literature that they might have access to. Right. Do prisoners have access routinely to the internet?
No.
But some of these prisons, believe it or not, some of them have Dharma groups, and volunteers from outside the community go in and lead Dharma groups. Some of them don't. But it's my experience with a couple of my prisoners that if I send them a book or something, they always say they end up sharing it with somebody. So, you know, word gets around if they're lucky enough to have a Dharma group in their prison. If there's not a Dharma group, that's all the more need for people like us.
And the GBF newsletter somehow is in these prisons. I don't quite know how that happens.
Yeah.
Probably because we send it to so many prisoners.
Well, that's how I guess it.
It might be a prisoner's particular personal story that might draw, you know, my response. Is there a way to kind of get a sense of who some of these people are individually before sort of deciding whether to sign up as a pen pal or not?
No. I mean, that would be a level of complexity that we haven't even begun to think about. It's basically sort of on, you know, a first-come, first-serve basis. How do you do it, Jim?
Well, I was just going to say, we do have introductory letters. They write us and request a pen pal, and it can be as simple as two sentences. I heard about your program. Can I have a pen pal? Mm-hmm. Or it can be something as beautiful as the letter that Jim wrote. So you do have a sense a little bit about, they may share something in their initial letter. What happens now is the letters come to GBF somehow, magically, and then Baruch sends them to me, and then I'm the middleman right now, so I write all the prisoners that don't have any pen pals, so sometimes I have 10 and 12 pen pals that are waiting for volunteers. So I know a little bit, and sometimes if a person comes to me, I can try to do, like I say, I try to do the best I can to match them with someone that might. But more than anything, it's a compassionate service, and as Jeffrey said, we basically try to just take the people that are first, that have been waiting the longest, and match them with the first volunteer that comes.
What I often do, I'm sorry, what?
About a month or so ago, I sent out an impassioned letter and got 11 volunteers, so I got caught up. Mm-hmm. But I had 11 people.
So what I usually do is if the letter comes to me and somebody wants a pen pal, I'll usually send him, you know, I'll send him some articles, a letter response. And then if he hasn't, what I'll do is say, please write back and tell me a little bit about yourself and your interest in Buddhism so that when the letter goes out to the new volunteer correspondent, that person will have a little bit of background on the person. But it's kind of like we don't have like a way for people to pick and choose the prisoner that they want to write.
And they try to pick and choose you guys, too. I want somebody between 30 and 35.
Generous.
Well, this, I have to dig back into my memory for this experience, but I think it was like in the 70s. Somehow or the other, I started writing to a prisoner. I don't remember how it came about. And it was a pretty good experience. And it developed into, I was on my way to Southern California, and he was at San Luis Obispo. And I went to visit him. And so that was fine, but in the conversation, I believe he asked me if I would bring some marijuana in.
Oh.
And that was just like, you know, we left on good terms, but we left because I wasn't going to get involved in that. And I think a little bit like Jim, my experience with it, maybe a little codependency could come into it if I got involved with something like that. And I don't want to do that. But I mean, that would be my reservation, you know, about disciplining myself as well. I would love to, you know, be assistance to someone like that. But it would be like that kind of thing and not getting too involved in that way. I'd probably get involved like you did.
You would.
Well, you know, I had a pen pal whose initial letter was, you know, extremely moving. And, you know, I found myself going there with him, and at some point I said, you know, this is not healthy for me or for him. So I wrote him, I said, look, you know, what I can offer you is my friendship, my correspondence, and to share Dharma with you. And if that's not good enough, and if that's not enough, then that's, you know, it's up to you. And I never heard back from him again.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think it is, you know, we do have to put up not barriers, but we have to be clear with ourselves what we're willing to do, what we're not willing to do, and then make that very clear to the other person. Because,
well,
I mean,
it's about boundaries, I think.
It's about boundaries, yes. But it's also about, like, you know, if I were in prison with no resources whatsoever, and I saw somebody outside who, from my, at least my point of view, has infinite resources, you know, I would probably ask,
yeah.
You know?
So, and one other thing about the guidelines is it goes to them also. The exact same guidelines are on both ends, and they have to agree to abide by those. So you're never in a position where you have to say, well, I can't, you know, like trying to explain your way out of something they're requesting. You just say, oh, you know what, that's covered in the guidelines, so we can't do that.
I've never had anyone violate any of those guidelines. I've written five different individuals now, and not a single one of them so far. It hasn't been a real long time, but no one's violated the guidelines so far.
When you mentioned earlier that you sometimes match up a prisoner and the outside correspondent with some life experience or something that's in common, like, I guess, I think you said HIV or other things that they've both gone through. I was wondering if you don't, if when you start corresponding, you don't get to know the person's history, or pick and choose, as he said, how do you match up those kind of commonalities?
Then it's just, if I don't know any, don't have any information, then I just do the best I can with who's ever on the top of the list matching. I just do a straight match.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes I just happen to have more information than other times.
Do you sometimes the person who's volunteering to be a pen pal say, I was a foster youth, or I was this, or I was that, and then, you know, maybe I could help someone in prison that has this.
Yeah. Sometimes they do, but I don't hold them back from until I can find the exact person with that experience. To be honest, most of the time I don't know much more about the volunteers than I do about the pen pals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't have an application form that lists your life experiences. So I wish, you know, that would be nice. But like the handicapped person, I wanted to share a little bit of one of his letters. He was a young man, I think he was 23, had a stroke in prison, and the first letter that I got from him was written like a child. His handwriting was so bad. And it just would break your heart. But I happened to have a friend that was disabled with heart disease. And so I asked him if he would take
this person as a pen pal, and it worked out that I was able to match them together. So that was just like really sweet that I could match someone that really understood what he was going through. But if I may, I just want to read a letter. I just happened to get a letter from him the other day. And he says, "I fell off my bunk and hurt my back, and I have been treated badly ever since. The officers have been making fun of my handicaps. Yesterday, an officer poured milk on me and kicked me out of the cafeteria because I was eating my food too slow. They only give us 3 to 4 minutes to eat." So you hear these stories that just break your heart with these kids. And 23 years old, he's handicapped, in prison, and gay. So, but anyway, we do our best to match them, and it's really sweet when we can find someone that can actually understand what they're going through a little bit better.
Any other questions?
I just want to thank you guys for being here and sharing your experiences. It's very powerful to witness your service and compassion.
And we love, for your sake and for the prisoner's sake, for everyone's benefit, to get a few new volunteer pen pals. As Jeffrey said, he left a pile of cards out there. I also created a sign-up list next to where we sign up for the mailing list. So feel free to leave your name and email there, and we'll get it to either Baruch or Jeffrey. And if you have any further questions, I hopefully at least 3 of us can hang out for a while during the social hour. And then just keep in mind that Baruch Golden, who is our contact person for this program, is here often, and I'm here maybe not quite as often, and Jim's here quite often. We all support each other, and Tom, and we all support each other this program, so you know, please join us if you have an interest, and please keep on asking questions. But we have to cut off this part of asking questions because it's time for us to break up and move to our social hour. But before we do, are there any general announcements anyone has to make?
Well, I'm the host today, and so there's some refreshments out there. Please help yourself, and just make sure you clean your dirty cup, top soap and tea, make sure it's clean with soapy water, and rinse. I'll be going around with that honorable and to support our Sangha and people who come here and share their wisdom. We generally suggest $5 to $8, whatever feels comfortable for you. And there is a list of people who are called to sign on the credenza, and you can sign your name, sign in. I think the last thing to say is that some of us meet at 12:30 and at by the door and head out for lunch.
Just if I... I'm going to give the cards to Jim, but I just wanted to say, so this has, if you have any questions about the program or... my email and office phone number are on here, but so I wanted to make it clear that the San Francisco Zen Center Correspondence Program is coordinated at the same place, but is separate. So if you come through me, there's no you would not necessarily get a gay pen pal, you know. But I just wanted to make that clear. But if you do have any questions about anything, or any resources that you need, I'm more than happy to do that.
Right. Thank you, gentlemen, for today. It's great. Susan Moon is our guest speaker next week. She's a writer and a teacher, and a writer for Turning Wheel, so she'll be here for our discussion next week.
Any other announcements?
So registration is open for our fall retreat. This is our 20th year. And maybe quite appropriately, following today's talk, the theme is gratitude, for all that we have. So there are flyers out on the credenza, also links to this online if you just want to print it out at home, and the registration form is right inside. So we're all set to go.
Did you make that flyer?
I did.
It's gorgeous.
Well, I didn't do the drawing.
Well, still, it's beautiful.
Also, in terms of the retreat, we do have a scholarship fund, and instructions for how to ask for a scholarship are on the back of that flyer. This is my fifth year of coordinating the retreat, and I'm very happy this year to be joined by three collaborators. Jerry Jones is handling registration and housing. He's not here today. So if anybody wants to register today, I'm happy to take your check. Tom Bruin is doing promotion. He designed this beautiful flyer. And Roy King is doing on-site logistics and really has helped me for many years. So I just wanted to acknowledge them.
Other announcements? Let's gather in our circle of prayer. So every week we gather in a circle to offer the merit of our practice to generally all beings, and I'd like to today to particularly focus the merit of our practice on all incarcerated beings. In the state of California, in the United States of America, Mexico, South America, Africa, China, Russia, Europe. Let's send the merit of our practice today out to prisoners everywhere. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.